This is Rossi, better known as Chef Rossi, for Raging and Eating. Well, today's show is in honor of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who sadly we lost just a few days ago. And I call this show Mother Earther. So yeah, I'm sure you're thinking, what does that sound like? And you know what? Maybe you're kind of right. It seems appropriate. But basically, losing Ruth Bader Ginsburg, wow, it's like a pain in the heart that's hard to describe. She's a feminist superhero. This little bitty thing, and so powerful, and all the obstacles she had to overcome. I mean, it's hard for me not to think about my own life and all the obstacles I had to overcome. Pretty much from day one, I think, with my family, let me tell you. There's a lot of obstacles in my family. I remember the first time I was told I had to do something or not do something because I was a girl. I was having a great time running around in the summer without my shirt on the beach. That was like 2 weeks ago. No, I'm kidding. I guess I was like 4 years old or something like that. And it was perfectly okay for my brother to run around without his shirt on. Why couldn't I run around without my shirt on? And no, everyone's like, no, you can't do that because you're a girl. And I was like, I'm not a girl. I'm a tomboy. I'm fierce. I'm strong. I'm proud. I'm powerful. How dare you tell me I can't do that? But in fact, I couldn't do that. And then I remember feeling incredibly powerful when I was 7 years old. And I mean, I was the second tallest kid in the class, and I was big and strong and husky, and all right, I was fat, okay, but in a husky, strong, powerful way. And I was winning fights with boys and playing in the dirt and being an excellent juvenile delinquent, and I felt powerful. I felt like an Indian warrior on my horse with my bow and arrow. I just felt really strong, like a little superhero. And I watched, there was one show I watched on Saturday cartoons I got obsessed with. It wasn't a cartoon, but it was like a kid's kind of show. And it was Mighty Isis. Are you old enough to remember that? I was obsessed with that. I was obsessed with Wonder Woman. Anything that showed women as strong and powerful. But then I got a little older and puberty came, and also a zillion things of people saying, no, girls do this, not that, and you can't do this. And it wasn't like I wanted to do all the things that girls were supposed to do, or I didn't. I just wanted to be me. I wanted to go back to feeling strong and powerful. It seemed like the second I got boobs, I wasn't allowed to do half the things that I'd been doing, and the whole experience was very crushing. You know, puberty is sort of confusing, but for woman power, it's really crushing. So I managed to get through it and find my own way. I became something of a rebel punk rocker, and that sort of worked for me more than anything else. Then I got older. I started looking for jobs to suit my bubbling personality. And people were like, well, you know, you have to be a babysitter. That was the first job I got saddled with, because you're a girl, you have to be a babysitter. And I was like, I'd much rather deliver newspapers like the boys. The compromise was I delivered newspapers and I was a babysitter. I was one lousy ass babysitter. I had these two little redheaded kids I was babysitting for in Red Bank, New Jersey. It was a cute little boy. He was like 4, and his older sister, she was like 6, I think. And I used to tell them little ghosty stories. I like telling ghosty stories. And I made up some ghosty story once that I was going to chop them up and put them in cookie dough, something like that. I don't know. It seemed funny coming out of my mouth, but I guess it probably wasn't the right thing to say to a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. And that combined with the fact that while I was downstairs talking on the phone with my friends, they were upstairs drawing on their room on all the walls with crayons. So their parents came home to find all the walls covered in crayons, and their kids terrified that I was going to kill them and chop them up and put them in cookie dough. So that was the end of that career. Anyway, I went on and I found a job, a summer job for several summers that suited my personality. It was on the Long Branch Amusement Pier. And my job was running the cigarette wheel. This was a cushy job. It was a big roulette wheel. People would come down and they'd place a quarter bet. And if they won, they'd get a carton of cigarettes. And I got a microphone. I was a total carnival barker. I'd say, what do you say? Come on and play. There's nothing to it. You can do it. Grab your girl and give it a whirl. Don't be gay. Come on and play. Except that I was gay. I didn't know it yet. And I wanted to play. I'd have all my friends come by and they'd put their quarter down and I'd always make sure they won. So my friends were getting a carton of cigarettes for a quarter. That was a good deal. And then I came to New York, to Brooklyn, as you may know. First stop, the Hasids, for a couple of years. Oy vey, oy vey. And I escaped and ultimately decided to become a bartender. I went to the International School of Bartending and everything. But then came the problem of getting a job. So this was like 1982, 83. And the Village Voice was where you would go to get a job, the Help Wanted ads. Well, every single ad for a female bartender always said the same thing. Must wear leotard. I mean, it was crazy. Now, what did that mean? Some of you are going to remember that female bartending jobs were always must wear leotard. It meant that you'd be wearing a Danskin one-piece leotard kind of thing and bartending in a stripper bar. Now, there's nothing wrong with strippers. Some of my best friends and a few of my ex-lovers were strippers. But that was not what I wanted to do. First of all, I did not want to be in some Danskin riding up my butt. I don't like anything riding up my butt. Don't give me a thong or a throng or a song riding up my butt. I don't like wedgies. But second of all, I don't enjoy watching men drool over women all night. Like, what the hell? I just want a job bartending. I don't want to wear a leotard. So finally, I got a job in a construction worker bar. It's like a rough and tumble construction worker bar on the Upper East Side. 73rd in York. The bar was called Humpty's, as in Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. The two guys who owned it, one worked the day shift and the other guy worked the night shift. And there was a dead zone. It was very busy around lunch and very busy at night when they had live music. But no one ever came in between. So pretty much from 3 o'clock till 9 o'clock was, I think that was my shift, or it was like 2 o'clock to 8. Anyway, it was the dead zone. The lunch had been busy and dinner, you know, the nighttime with the live music was busy. I got the dead zone. I think it was 2 to 8 o'clock or something. Whatever. Doesn't matter. So I would go in and I kind of had the place to myself because my boss was like, look, we don't make a dime from 2 to 8 o'clock. So do what you want, you know? I was like, all right. Meanwhile, the construction workers that were there, they were all like management construction workers. So they were on, one guy was like, his job was just to sit there and drink and go in occasionally and check the valves to make sure nothing was blowing up. But they were like a rough, rough bunch of construction workers. And talk about sexual harassment. I mean, no one ever used my name. Honey, baby, sweetie, sugar tits. Now, what the hell does that mean? What the hell does that mean? Is that a compliment? You're trying to say your breasts are so lovely that they remind me of sugar? Is that what that is? Because it's not a compliment. I like sugar. But I do not want sugar on my breasts, and I don't want to be called sugar boobs. I won't even say the T word again because it's just nauseating. Thinking now about the Me Too movement, you know, these kind of things now, and people would get fired or whatever to say that kind of stuff. But back then, every day was sexual harassment day. Every day was a Me Too day. So I found ways to defend myself. I just basically developed a really, really filthy mouth. And if a man would become too insistent on, like, hooking up with me, I would just go into vivid detail about how I was suffering from either menstrual cramps or a yeast infection or a combination. And that always kind of fixed the situation. You know, men love women and they always want to get with women, but they don't ever want to hear that we're having any womanly problems. God forbid. So eventually I got out of bartending and decided to become a professional chef. Now, there was nothing more sexist in the world than trying to become a professional chef in 1987, I think it was, as a woman. I mean, we had Julia Child. Everyone knew how great she was. She was such a pioneer, and she also spied, was it for the Brits against the Nazis? Awesome, powerful lady. This is right around the era, wasn't Alice Waters, I think it was right around that era, who changed the way we felt about goat cheese forever. But pretty much, if you had a vagina, you had a really hard time getting a job in a professional kitchen. And I didn't want to give up. I mean, it was painful, though. I mean, the sexual harassment was off the charts. But I was like, no, no, no. I cursed my way through it with my filthy mouth and my big construction worker boots and my tough attitude. And I'm like, one day, one day, one day, I'm going to be the boss. I'm going to make this show the way I want it. And I started getting jobs as the boss. And every chance I had, I would hire women. Because that's another thing. Sometimes the biggest enemy of women is women. You'll have someone who has a position of power as a woman and does not want to hire another woman because she feels like she's standing on top of the needle head. You know, this very little space, and doesn't want to let another woman in there. And yet they'll give opportunities and jobs to men. I've got a friend of mine for years. She's always had really powerful jobs in magazines and newspapers. And I've always been a writer for as long as I can remember. She will always give opportunities to men. She's never given me any kind of opportunity. And it just seems like she feels like there's not enough room in that little space she stands in for another woman. That's all I can figure. It's kind of a sad thing. I mean, if you don't think we're living in a sexist world, just look at what happened when Hillary Clinton was running for president. Think of all the things people said about her. She's too cold. She doesn't smile. She looks mean. I don't like her pantsuits. I don't like her hair. I'm not going to vote for her because she's not smiling and she's wearing a pantsuit. I mean, you know, you heard all that kind of stuff, and maybe you said some of those things. But have you ever not voted for a man because you didn't like his smile or lack of his smile, or you didn't like his suits, or you didn't like that he didn't laugh, or that he laughed weird? I mean, no, you didn't. Because this was incredibly sexist. I had no idea how sexist this country is. Listen, it's not a Democrat or Republican thing. This is a man-woman thing. And the point of fact is, Hillary Clinton endured disgusting levels of sexism. Still to this day, I mean, the poor woman, she's got to be so powerful to have endured that. I'm sorry, Hillary. I'm sorry they did that to you. They never even gave you a chance to be judged on your merits, just on your friggin' pantsuits. Now we've lost Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Total superhero, that little bitty thing. Total superhero. But I digress. So we'll get back to Ruth in a minute. So eventually I started my own business. And I always would go out of my way to hire other women because there wasn't enough of that going on. And some of the most powerful women I've ever learned wonderful things from in the culinary world were women who worked for me. I was blessed to have this woman. We called her Big Sue, except back then she was Big Sue. She was like 6 feet tall and 300 pounds, but then she lost 150 pounds on the Dr. Atkins diet. So now she's Little Sue. Total pioneer woman. She lives in San Diego, and she would come in for long visits to New York and work with me, and it was just a delight to work with her. First time I ever worked with her, it was a really hot day in the kitchen, and Alex, who was my maitre d', brought Sue in. And I walked into the kitchen, and she was working wearing nothing but a black bra and a little kind of a spandex stretchy pants and an apron over the bra. And she was like, honey, it's too hot for clothes. So naturally, I was going to fire her. I mean, the woman is working naked, the 6-foot-tall giant woman in her underwear. But then she put a spoonful of guacamole in my mouth, and my God, I've never tasted anything like that. It was creamy. The garlic was just infused. It was a gorgeous thing. That woman could cook like nobody's business. And she had a business cooking out of like a Winnebago, an RV or something, for giant rock concerts. I mean, she was really righteous and really strong. Later on, she went back to San Diego and took over running an entire racetrack, supervising food for 10,000 people a day. I mean, daunting. She would go around with her walkie-talkie in her golf cart. She worked so much that she moved into an RV in the parking lot of the racetrack. So she was right there to run things. Just powerful, powerful woman. And so kind and humble. Amazing. I had a Cuban woman named Nilda work as my sous chef for many years. She was a little toughy. She had like a side shave on her hair. And she wore these giant sneakers. I mean, they were like the granddaddy of Air Jordans. I don't know what they were, half sneaker, half construction boot. They were huge. And she was a really great cook and a fast one. I mean, she could have been a short order cook for like the busiest diner in the universe. Again, very humble. She just liked her Rolling Rocks and her music, and she liked to cook and then go home and play her tunes and have a beer. Simple and lovely. And she made my life really, really pleasurable for a long time. And then she eventually left cooking and went into real estate, I think. So many people wouldn't give Nilda a chance because she was Afro-Cuban, because she had this toughy, dykey kind of look, because she had a big mouth. I don't know, you know, but I was lucky because I got her and I believed in her and she believed in me and she made my life much better for a long time. And right now, I mean, just today, I finished doing a bunch of great tastings for these two beautiful couples, giant tastings of all of this fabulous food, vegetable samosas with cilantro, chutney, black bean, empanadas with home-style guacamole, Korean barbecue beef, Puerto Rican bacalitos with lemon tartare. Those are codfish fritters. What else did we do? Oh, vegetable curry in espresso cups. I made it Caribbean style as opposed to like Indonesian style. And shots of carrot ginger soup that we presented in mini beer mugs. Sea salt brownies and my famous Oreo crack. I mean, just tons of stuff. So my sous chef Gloria, who I called Glory, no one else does call her that but me, but that's okay. She's definitely a Glory. She was nonstop. Nonstop the whole time. She never stopped moving. Cranking, cranking, cranking. I mean, just, there's like smoke under her feet. And that was all with a little bit of a hangover, I think, because we had a little party last night. But I digress. Glory's again someone who probably a lot of people have said no to. Because she's not a cute little white girl. She doesn't have her straight hair and her blue eyes and, you know, bat her eyes, you know. She's got a little bit of caramel in her skin and a little toughy in her softy, you know. And why not? Meanwhile, so I get blessed with this awesome person, but how many other people have closed the door on her? Because she's a woman, because she's brown skin. I mean, come on, get over it. So, now, we just had the high holidays, Rosh Hashanah, and I'm a high holiday Jew. So basically, I go to the synagogue on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I like it. It's not like a chore, especially now. Well, it used to be a chore because I grew up Orthodox and the men and the women sat separate. And only the men could go up to the bima and talk and the women just kind of sat in the lobby and gossiped. I knew there was something wrong with that. But many years later, I started going to Congregation Beth Simchat Torah. Simchas Torah, that's the way I say it, the gay synagogue, and it's the largest gay synagogue in the world, as far as I know. And the rabbi is a woman, Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum. It's so beautiful. To go into that first service, I can't tell you how it felt, to see a woman at the bima, to see a woman cantor, I mean, it was incredible. And there was gay and straight, white and black, every color of the rainbow, lesbians with their children, gay men with their children. I mean, it's just, oh, it's a beautiful thing. So on the high holidays, there's a normally a synagogue. CBSD has a synagogue, but on the high holidays, so many people come, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people, that they rent out the Javits Center. For Yom Kippur, they'll rent out part of the giant Coliseum-sized Javits Center in New York. It's unbelievable. Except for this year. This year, with Corona, the rabbi and the musical director and the cantor was just the three of them in the chapel, in the synagogue, and the men who were filming them with the cameras. And we all watched it on a live feed. And then they would switch to the choir. It's kind of like those Brady Bunch squares. I guess everyone was in a Zoom. But they somehow still managed to sound beautiful. It was a full choir, and they introduced the children's choir this year. And so at first I felt sad not to go to the synagogue, but then I was like, you know what, it's not so bad because I'm still in my underwear for the whole service. How bad could it be? But we found out on Rosh Hashanah, right after I dipped my apple in honey for a sweet New Year, that's when I found out we'd lost Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And, oh my God, just so sad. The rabbi said something about her the next day that I didn't know, which was that Ruth lost her mother when she was 17, and that was her best friend. It was heartbreaking for her. And she wanted to say the mourner's Kaddish at the memorial, at the Shiva, for her mother. But she wasn't allowed to because she was a woman, a young woman. It was just for men, and she was raised Orthodox. And I think that was her moment, right then and there, where she decided to change the world. No, I will not be told I cannot mourn for my mother because I'm a woman. I think that was her moment, and she did change the world. Ruth, thank you. Thank you for that. I don't know when my moment was when I decided to change the world, but I know there were 1,000 little moments when people told me that I couldn't do something because I was a girl or because I was a woman, and women just weren't strong enough and good enough and just couldn't do it. 1,000 moments. And every day, those moments happen. So how could we honor Ruth Bader Ginsburg? How can we honor ourselves if we are women? Or if we're men, how can we honor our wives, our daughters, our sisters, our mothers, our friends who are women? Well, we can honor them and we can honor us. We girls can be the best we can possibly be, and don't ever let anyone tell you can't do it. And men, help the women in your life excel. Encourage them, push them, give them opportunities. What did Ruth say? Stop. Take your foot off our neck. Take your foot off our neck, for crying out loud. Come on. Give us our equality. We're not asking for special treatment. We're just asking for you to take your damn foot off our neck. So, I choose to honor women by being the best possible role model I can be, by having my business be an open home for women to come in and have opportunities, by encouraging other women. I have my goddaughter, Zora. I have my adopted goddaughter, Hannah. I have my beautiful niece, Ruby, who's now a teacher and a mother. And every day, she's rising to the occasion. And she is an Orthodox Jewish woman who is still teaching and supporting her family and taking care of her family and educating herself and educating other women and not letting what she's been told stop her. Ruby, I'm so proud of you. Anyway, my point is that it's time to change the world. It's hard to imagine that equality still doesn't exist. That people still wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton because they didn't like her smile or her pantsuit. That Ruth Bader Ginsburg is so often and was so often one of the only voices to speak out with all that opposition around her, but she did keep speaking out. that even now, women are not as plentiful behind the bar in kitchens as they should be, nearly not as much as men. We're even now not making as much money as men. So, how else might I honor women today? How might I honor Ruth today? Well, maybe we could also start by honoring Mother Earth. I think I choose to honor Mother Earth in Ruth's name, because none of this is going to matter if we keep on destroying her. And yes, it is a her. Someone that beautiful and powerful has got to be a woman. So I choose to honor Mother Earth by making fabulous things that are vegan. And I'm not a vegan or a vegetarian, but I can make some awesome vegan and vegetarian food, and maybe that makes people eat a few less cows. Maybe it makes people dig up a few less trees. I don't know. I think so. I've been making Rice Krispie tahini treats. I didn't invent the recipe, but I've changed it enough so I feel like I kind of own it. It's really awesome. You got to try it. You dump like 3 quarts of Rice Krispies in a bowl, and you sprinkle some black sesame seeds and mix that all up. And you get a baking pan and you really grease it up, put parchment paper and spray it with cooking spray, because this is a big mess. And then in a pot, you dump in 3 cups of tahini and 1 cup of agave and maybe 6 good spoons of brown sugar. And you heat it up over low heat until it's nice and hot. You don't want to see it simmering or boiling. When you want it to be hot enough that it would burn your finger if you stuck it in. Then you pour that into the Rice Krispies and you mix it all up. And you take your mushy guck, your Rice Krispie tahini guck, and you put it in your greased baking dish. And you press it down. And you put a piece of parchment paper that you've sprayed with cooking spray on top of it. And then you take a rolling pin and you roll, roll, roll until it's all nice and flat and even and tight. Just like me. Flat and even and tight. Well, I'm not flat. I've got my sugar tits, as we've established. Anyway, you roll it all out, you let it set, and then you cut it up into like little Rice Krispie treats, like little squares or triangles, whatever you want to. Now, the first day, it's going to be super soft, so it might be a little bit falling apart, but it gets firmer every day, so the next day it's even firmer, and the day after that it's even firmer. And I've made it a week in advance, and it was great, fabulous. And it's kind of savory. So actually, you know, sometimes give it a little pinch of salt to even out the agave. So it's like an adult dessert. It's not overly sweet. It's kind of savory. I've been serving this a lot, completely vegan and gluten-free. This is what I call the everybody wins dessert, and easier on the planet too. So there you have it. So I don't know how best to say how I feel about losing Ruth, except that I feel like I lost a friend that I never met in person, but who's been affecting my life every day. I know that opportunities I've been given might have indirectly been tied to her, because she's been fighting for my rights for my whole life. I've never met her, and she's the best friend I could have had. I like to think that she's up there orchestrating some awesome things in heaven. And I think also we might see her again one day. But in the meanwhile, Ruth, I choose to honor you by being the best woman I can be and by helping all the other women around me, if I can, be the best women they can be. So, what else can I say except, obviously, I am woman, hear me roar. And go out and make your Rice Krispie tahini treats. And for the love of God, vote. Vote, and boys, get off our neck. Support us, love us, lift us up, let us fly, let us fly. It's a good thing. Support us. Support your wives, your daughters, your mothers. All right, I made the point. It's a little bit of mishigosh now. I'm Jewish. That's what I do. So, this is Rossi, better known as Chef Rossi, feminist extraordinaire, and this is Raging and Eating, and today's show was called Mother Earther, and yes, it is meant to sound like what you're thinking, but that's okay. So as always, remember, Food is love, and so are you. Now go out and find somebody to love.